We should.
I turned to meet his eyes and regretted immediately. There are less than 3 inches between us, and I can't move because my body only knows how to freeze. Every muscle, every movement tightens. Every vertebra in my spinal column is a block of ice. I'm holding my breath, and my eyes are wide, locked, caught in the intensity of his gaze. I can't look away. I don't know how to retreat. Oh, God, his eyes. I've been lying to myself, determined to deny the impossible. I know him, I know him, I know him, I know him. The boy who does not remember me. I used to know.
They're going to destroy the English language,
he says, his voice careful, quiet. I fight to catch my breath.
They want to recreate everything,
he continues.
They want to redesign everything. They want to destroy anything that could have been the reason for our problems. They think we need a new universal language.
He drops his voice, drops his eyes.
They want to destroy everything, every language in history.
No. My breath hitches. Spots cloud my vision.
I know.
No. This I did not know. He looks up.
It's good that you're writing things down. One day, what you're doing will be illegal.
I've begun to shake. My body is suddenly fighting a maelstrom of emotions. My brain plagued by the world I'm losing and pained by this boy who does not remember me. The pen stumbles its way to the floor, and I'm gripping the blanket so hard I'm afraid it's going to tear. Ice slices my skin. Horror clots my veins. I never thought it would get this bad. I never thought the reestablishment would take things so far. They're incinerating culture, the beauty of diversity. The new citizens of our world will be reduced to nothing but numbers, easily interchangeable, easily removable, easily destroyed for disobedience. We have lost our humanity. I wrap the blanket around my shoulders until I'm cocooned in the tremors that won't stop terrorizing my body. I'm horrified by my lack of self-control. I can't make myself still. His hand is suddenly on my back. His touch is scorching my skin through the layers of fabric, and I inhale so fast my lungs collapse. I'm caught in colliding currents of confusion, so desperate, so desperate, so desperate to be close, so desperate to be far away. I don't know how to move away from him. I don't want to move away from him. I don't want him to be afraid of me.
Hey.
His voice is soft, so soft, so soft. His arms are stronger than all the bones in my body. He pulls my swaddled figure close to his chest and I shatter. 2, 3, 4, 50,000 pieces of feeling stab me in the heart, melt into drops of warm honey that soothe the scars in my soul. The blanket is the only barrier between us, and he pulls me closer, tighter, stronger, until I hear the beats humming deep within his chest, and the steel of his arms around my body severs all ties to tension in my limbs. His heat melts the icicles, propping me up from the inside out, and I thaw, I thaw, I thaw, my eyes fluttering fast until they fall closed. Until silent tears are streaming down my face, and I've decided the only thing I want to freeze is his frame holding mine.
It's okay,
he whispers.
You'll be okay.
Truth is a jealous, vicious mistress that never ever sleeps, is what I don't tell him. I'll never be okay. It takes every broken filament in my being to pull away from him. I do it because I have to. Because it's for his own good. Someone is sticking forks in my back as I trip away, The blanket catches my foot, and I nearly fall before Adam reaches out to me again.
Juliet.
You can't touch me. My breathing is shallow and hard to swallow, my fingers shaking so fast I clench them into a fist. You can't touch me. You can't. My eyes are trained on the door. He's on his feet.
Why not?
You just can't. I whisper to the walls.
I don't understand. Why won't you talk to me? You sit in the corner all day and write in your book and look at everything but my face. You have so much to say to a piece of paper, but I'm standing right here and you don't even acknowledge me. Juliet, please.
He reaches for my arm and I turn away.
Why won't you at least look at me? I'm not going to hurt you.
You don't remember me. You don't remember that we went to the same school for 7 years. You don't remember me. You don't know me. My voice is even, flat. My limbs numb, amputated. We've shared one space for 2 weeks and you think you know me, but you don't know anything about me. Maybe I am crazy.
You're not,
he says through clenched teeth.
You know you're not.
Then maybe it's you, I say carefully, slowly. Because one of us is.
That's not true.
Tell me why you're here, Adam. What are you doing in an insane asylum if you don't belong here?
I've been asking you the same question since I got here.
Maybe you ask too many questions. I hear his hard exhalation of breath. He laughs a bitter laugh.
We're practically the only two people who are alive in this place, and you want to shut me out too?
I close my eyes and focus on breathing. You can talk to me. Just don't touch me. 7 seconds of silence join the conversation.
Maybe I want to touch you.
There are 15,000 feeling of disbelief hole-punched in my heart. I'm tempted by recklessness, aching, 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 desperate forever for what I can never have. I turn my back on him, but I can't keep the lies from spilling out of my lips. Maybe I don't want you to. He makes a harsh sound.
I disgust you that much.
I spin around, so caught off guard by his words I forget myself. He's staring at me, his face hard, his jaw set, his fingers flexing by his sides. His eyes are two buckets of rainwater, deep, fresh, clear. Hurt. You don't know what you're talking about. I can't breathe.
You can't just answer a simple question, can you?
He shakes his head and turns to the wall. My face is cast in a neutral mold, my arms and legs filled with plaster. I feel nothing. I am nothing. I am empty of everything. I will never move. I'm staring at a small crack near my shoe. I will stare at it forever. The blankets fall to the floor. The world fades out of focus. My ears outsource every sound to another dimension. My eyes close. My thoughts drift. My memories kick me in the heart. I know him. I've tried so hard to stop thinking about him. I've tried so hard to forget his face. I've tried so hard to get those blue, blue, blue eyes out of my head, but I know him. I know him. I know him. It's been 3 years since I last saw him. I could never forget Adam. But he's already forgotten me. Chapter 7. I remember televisions and fireplaces and porcelain sinks. I remember movie tickets and parking lots and SUVs. I remember hair salons and holidays and window shutters and dandelions and the smell of freshly paved driveways. I remember toothpaste commercials, and ladies in high heels, and old men in business suits. I remember mailmen, and libraries, and boy bands, and balloons, and Christmas trees. I remember being 10 years old when we couldn't ignore the food shortages anymore, and things got so expensive no one could afford to live. Adam is not speaking to me. Maybe it's for the best. Maybe there was no point hoping he and I could be friends. Maybe it's better he thinks I don't like him than that I like him too much. He's hiding a lot of something that might be pain. But his secrets scare me. He won't tell me why he's here, though I don't tell him much either. And yet. Last night, the memory of his arms around me was enough to scare away the screams. The warmth of a kind embrace, the strength of firm hands holding all of my pieces together, the relief and release of so many years' loneliness. This gift he's given me, I can't repay. Touching Juliet is nearly impossible. I'll never forget the horror in my mother's eyes, the torture in my father's face, the fear etched in their expressions. Their child is a monster. Possessed by the devil, cursed by darkness, unholy, an abomination. Drugs, tests, medical solutions failed. Psychological cross-examinations failed. She is a walking weapon in society, is what the teacher said. We've never seen anything like it, is what the doctor said. She should be removed from your home, is what the police officers said. No problem at all, is what my parents said. I was 14 years old when they finally got rid of me. When they stood back and watched as I was dragged away for a murder I didn't know I could commit. Maybe the world is safer with me locked in a cell. Maybe Adam is safer if he hates me. He's sitting in the corner with his fists in his face. I never wanted to hurt him. I never wanted to hurt the only person who never wanted to hurt me. The door crashes open and 5 people swarm into the room, rifles pointed at our chests. Adam is on his feet and I'm made of stone. I've forgotten to inhale. I haven't seen so many people in so long, I'm momentarily stupefied. I should be screaming. Hands up, feet apart, mouths shut. Don't move and we won't shoot you. I'm still frozen in place. I should move. I should lift my arms. I should spread my feet. I should remember to breathe. Someone is cutting off my neck. The one barking orders slams the butt of his gun into my back and my knees crack as they hit the floor. I finally taste oxygen and a sight of blood. I think Adam is yelling, but there is an acute agony ripping through my body, unlike anything I've experienced before. I'm utterly immobilized. What don't you understand about keeping your mouth shut? I squint sideways to see the barrel of the gun 2 inches away from Adam's face. Get up! A steel-toed boot kicks me in the ribs, fast, hard, hollow. I'm swallowing nothing but the strangled gasps choking my body. I said get up! Harder, faster, stronger, another boot in my gut. I can't even cry out. Get up, Juliet. Get up. If you don't, they will shoot Adam. I heave myself up to my knees and fall back on the wall behind me, stumbling forward to catch my balance. Lifting my hands is more torture than I knew I could endure. My organs are dead, my bones are cracked, my skin is a sieve, punctured by pins and needles of pain. They've finally come to kill me. That's why they put Adam in my cell. Because I'm leaving. Adam is here because I'm leaving, because they forgot to kill me on time, because my moments are over, because my 17 years were too many for this world. They're going to kill me. I always wondered how it would happen. I wonder if this will make my parents happy. Someone is laughing.
Well, aren't you a little shit?
I don't even know if they're talking to me. I can hardly focus on keeping my arms upright.
She's not even crying, someone adds. The girls are usually begging for mercy by now.
The walls are beginning to bleed into the ceiling. I wonder how long I can hold my breath. I can't distinguish words. I can't understand the sounds I'm hearing. The blood is rushing through my head, and my lips are two blocks of concrete I can't crack open. There's a gun in my back, and I'm tripping forward. The floors are falling up. My feet are dragging in a direction I can't decipher. I hope they kill me soon.
Chapter 8. It takes me 2 days to open my eyes. There's a tin of water and a tin of food set off to the side, and I inhale the cold contents with trembling hands, a dull ache creaking through my bones, a desperate drought suffocating my throat. Nothing seems to be broken, but one glance under my shirt proves the pain was real. The bruises are discolored blossoms of blue and yellow, torture to touch, and slow to heal. Adam is nowhere. I am alone in a block of solitude, four walls no more than 10 feet in every direction, the only air creeping in through a small slot in the door. I've just begun to terrorize myself with my imagination when the heavy metal door slams open. A guard with two rifles strung across his chest looks me up and down.
Get up.
This time I don't hesitate. I hope Adam, at least, is safe. I hope he doesn't come to the same end I do.
Follow me.
The guard's voice is thick and deep, his gray eyes unreadable. He looks about 25 years old, blonde hair cropped close to the crown, shirt sleeves rolled up to his shoulders, military tattoos snaking up his forearms, just like Adam's. Oh, God. No. Adam steps into the doorway beside the blonde and gestures with his weapon toward a narrow hallway. Move.
Adam is pointing a gun at my chest.
Adam is pointing a gun at my chest. Adam is pointing a gun at my chest. His eyes are foreign to me, glassy and distant, far, far away. I am nothing but Novocaine. I am numb, a world of nothing, all feeling and emotion, gone forever. I am a whisper that never was. Adam is a soldier. Adam wants me to die. I stare at him openly now. Every sensation amputated. My pain a distant scream disconnected from my body. My feet move forward of their own accord. My lips remain shut because there will never be words for this moment. Death would be a welcome release from these earthly joys I've known. I don't know how long I've been walking before another blow to my back cripples me. I blink against the brightness of light I haven't seen in so long. My eyes begin to tear and I'm squinting against the fluorescent bulbs illuminating the large space. I can hardly see anything.
Juliet Ferrars.
A voice detonates my name. There's a heavy boot pressed into my back and I can't lift my head to distinguish who's speaking to me.
Weston, dim the lights and release her. I want to see her face.
The command is cool and strong like steel, dangerously calm, effortlessly powerful. The brightness is reduced to a level I'm able to tolerate. The imprint of a boot is carved into my back, but no longer settled on my skin. I lift my head and look up. I'm immediately struck by his youth. He can't be much older than me. It's obvious he's in charge of something, though I have no idea what. His skin is flawless, unblemished, his jawline sharp and strong. His eyes are the palest shade of emerald I've ever seen. He's beautiful. His crooked smile
is calculated evil. He's sitting on what he imagines to be a throne, but is nothing more than a chair at the front of an empty room. His suit is perfectly pressed, his blonde hair expertly combed, his soldiers the ideal bodyguards. I hate him.
You're so stubborn.
His green eyes are almost translucent.
You never want to cooperate. You wouldn't even play nice with your cellmate.
I flinch without intending to. The burn of betrayal blushes at my neck. Green Eyes looks unexpectedly amused, and I'm suddenly mortified.
Well, isn't that interesting?
He snaps his fingers.
Kent, would you step forward, please?
My heart stops beating when Adam comes into view. Kent. His name is Adam Kent. I am aflame from head to toe. Adam flanks Green Eyes in an instant, but only offers a curt nod of his head as a salute. Perhaps the leader isn't nearly as important as he thinks.
Sir,
he says. So many thoughts are tangling in my head, I can't untie the insanity knotting itself together. I should have known. I'd heard rumors of soldiers living among the public in secret, reporting to the authorities if things seemed suspicious. Every day people disappeared. No one ever came back. Though I still can't understand why Adam was sent to spy on me.
It seems you made quite an impression on her.
I squint closer at the man in the chair, only to realize his suit has been adorned with tiny color patches, military mementos. His last name is etched into the lapel. Warner. Adam says nothing. He doesn't look in my direction. His body is erect, 6 feet of gorgeous, lean muscle. His profile strong and steady. The same arms that held my body are now holsters for lethal weapons.
You have nothing to say about that?
Warner glances at Adam, only to tilt his head in my direction, his eyes dancing in the light, clearly entertained. Adam clenches his jaw.
Sir? Of course.
Warner is suddenly bored.
Why should I expect you to have something to say?
Are you going to kill me? The words escape my lips before I have a chance to think them through, and someone's gun slams into my spine all over again. I fall to the floor with a broken whimper, wheezing into the filthy floor.
That wasn't necessary, Roland.
Warner's voice is saturated with mock disappointment.
I suppose I'd be wondering the same thing if I were in her position.
A pause.
Juliet.
I manage to lift my head.
I have a proposition for you.
Chapter 9. I'm not sure I'm hearing him correctly.
You have something I want.
Warner is still staring at me. I don't understand, I tell him. He takes a deep breath and stands up to pace the length of the room. Adam has not yet been dismissed.
You are kind of a pet project of mine.
Warner smiles to himself.
I've studied your records for a very long time.
I can't handle his pompous, self-satisfied strut. I want to break the grin off his face. Warner stops walking.
I want you on my team.
What? A broken whisper of surprise.
We're in the middle of a war,
he says, a little impatiently.
Maybe you can put the pieces together?
I don't.
I know your secret, Juliet. I know why you're in here. Your entire life is documented in hospital records. Complaints to authorities, messy lawsuits, public demands to have you locked up.
His pause gives me enough time to choke on the horror caught in my throat.
I'd been considering it for a long time, but I wanted to make sure you weren't actually psychotic. Isolation wasn't exactly a good indicator, though you did fend for yourself quite well.
He offers me a smile that says I should be grateful for his praise.
I sent Adam to stay with you as a final precaution. I wanted to make sure you weren't volatile, that you were capable of basic human interaction and communication. I must say, I'm quite pleased with the results.
Someone is ripping my skin off.
Adam, it seems, played his part a little too excellently. He is a fine soldier. One of the best, in fact.
Warner spares him a glance before smiling at me.
But don't worry. He doesn't know what you're capable of. Not yet, anyway.
I claw at the panic. I swallow the agony. I beg myself not to look in his direction, but I fail. I fail. I fail. Adam meets my eyes in the same split second I meet his, but he looks away so quickly I'm not sure if I imagined it. I am a monster.
I am not as cruel as you think, Warner continues,
a musical lilt in his voice.
If you're so fond of his company, I can make this,
he gestures between myself and Adam,
a permanent assignment.
No, I breathe. Warner curves his lips into a careless grin.
Oh, yes. But be careful, pretty girl. If you do something bad, he'll have to shoot you.
There are wire cutters carving holes in my heart. Adam doesn't react to anything Warner says. He's doing a job. I am a number, a mission, an easily replaceable object. I am not even a memory in his mind. I am nothing. I didn't expect his betrayal to bury me so deep.
If you accept my offer, Warner interrupts my thoughts, you will live like I do. You will be one of us and not one of them. Your life will change forever.
And if I do not accept? I ask, catching my voice before it cracks in fear. Warner looks genuinely disappointed. His hands are clasped together in dismay.
You don't really have a choice. If you stand by my side, you will be rewarded.
He presses his lips together.
But if you choose to disobey, well, I think you look rather lovely with all your body parts intact, don't you?
I'm breathing so hard, my frame is shaking. You want me to torture people for you? His face breaks into a brilliant smile.
That would be wonderful.
The world is bleeding. I don't have time to form a response before he turns to Adam.
Show her what she's missing, would you?
Adam answers a beat too late.
Sir? That is an order, soldier.
Warner's eyes are trained on me, his lips twitching with suppressed amusement.
I'd like to break this one. She's a little too feisty for her own good.
You can't touch me, I spit through clenched teeth.
Wrong,
he sing-songs. He tosses Adam a pair of black gloves.
You're going to need these,
he says with a conspiratorial whisper.
You're a monster.
My voice is too even, my body filled with a sudden rage.
Why don't you just kill me?
That, my dear, would be a waste.
He steps forward and I realize his hands are carefully sheathed in white leather gloves. He tips my chin up with one finger.
Besides, it'd be a shame to lose such a pretty face.
I try to snap my neck away from him, but the same steel-toed boot slams into my spine, and Warner catches my face in his grip. I suppress a scream.
Don't struggle, love. You'll only make things more difficult for yourself.
I hope you rot in hell. Warner flexes his jaw. He holds up a hand to stop someone from shooting me, kicking me in the spleen, cracking my skull open. I have no idea.
You're a fighter for the wrong team.
He stands up straight.
But we can change that. Adam,
he calls.
Don't let her out of your sight. She's your charge now. Yes, sir.
Chapter 10. Adam puts on the gloves, but he doesn't touch me.
Let her up, Roland. I'll take it from here.
The boot disappears. I struggle to my feet and stare at nothing. I won't think about the horror that awaits me. Someone kicks in the backs of my knees, and I nearly stumble to the ground.
Get going,
a voice growls from behind. I look up and realize Adam is already walking away. I'm supposed to be following him. Only once we're back in the familiar blindness of the asylum hallways does he stop walking.
Juliet.
One soft word and my joints are made of air. I don't answer him.
Take my hand,
he says. I will never, I manage between broken bites of oxygen. Not ever. A heavy sigh. I feel him shift in the darkness, and soon his body is too close, so disarmingly close to mine. His hand is on my lower back, and he's guiding me through the corridors toward an unknown destination. Every inch of my skin is blushing. I have to hold myself upright to keep from falling backward into his arms. The distance we're walking is much longer than I expected. When Adam finally speaks, I suspect we're close to the end.
We're going to go outside,
he says near my ear. I have to ball my fists to control the thrills tripping my heart. I'm almost too distracted by the feel of his voice to understand the significance of what he's saying.
I just thought you should know.
An audible intake of breath is my only response. I haven't been outside in almost a year. I'm painfully excited, but I haven't felt natural light on my skin in so long, I don't know if I'll be able to handle it. I have no choice. The air hits me first. Our atmosphere has little to boast of, but after so many months in a concrete corner, even the wasted oxygen of our dying earth tastes like heaven. I can't inhale fast enough. I fill my lungs with the feeling. I step into the slight breeze and clutch a fistful of wind as it weaves its way through my fingers. Bliss, unlike anything I've ever known. The air is crisp and cool. A refreshing bath of tangible nothing that stings my eyes and snaps at my skin. The sun is high today, blinding as it reflects the small patches of snow keeping the earth frozen. My eyes are pressed down by the weight of the bright light, and I can't see through more than two slits, but the warm rays wash over my body like a jacket fitted to my form, like the hug of something greater than a human. I could stand still in this moment forever. For one infinite second, I feel free. Adam's touch shocks me back to reality. I nearly jump out of my skin and he catches my waist. I have to beg my bones to stop shaking.
Are you okay?
His eyes surprise me. They're the same ones I remember, blue and bottomless, like the deepest part of the ocean. His hands are gentle, so gentle. Around me. I don't want you to touch me, I lie.
You don't have a choice.
He won't look at me. I always have a choice. He runs a hand through his hair and swallows the nothing in his throat.
Follow me.
We're in a blank space, an empty acre filled with dead leaves and dying trees, taking small sips from melted snow in the soil. The landscape has been ravaged by war and neglect, and it's still the most beautiful thing I've seen in so long. The stomping soldiers stop to watch as Adam opens a car door for me. It's not a car. It's a tank. I stare at the massive metal body and attempt to climb my way up the side when Adam is suddenly behind me. He hoists me up by the waist, and I gasp as he settles me into the seat. Soon we're driving in silence, and I have no idea where we're headed. I'm staring out the window at everything. I'm eating and drinking and absorbing every infinitesimal detail in the debris, in the skyline, in the abandoned homes and broken pieces of metal and glass sprinkled in the scenery. The world looks naked, stripped of vegetation and warmth. There are no street signs, no stop signs. There's no need for either. There's no public transportation. Everyone knows that cars are now manufactured by only one company and sold at a ridiculous rate. Very few people are allowed a means of escape. My parents, the general population, has been distributed across what's left of the country. Industrial buildings form the spine of the landscape, tall, rectangular metal boxes stuffed full of machinery. Machinery intended to strengthen the army, to strengthen the reestablishment, to destroy mass quantities of human civilization. Carbon tar steel, gray black silver, smoky colors smudged into the skyline, dripping into the slush that used to be snow. Trash is heaped in haphazard piles everywhere, patches of yellowed grass peeking out from under the devastation. Traditional homes of our old world have been abandoned, windows shattered, roofs collapsing, red and green and blue paint scrubbed into muted shades to better match our bright future. Now I see the compounds carelessly constructed on the ravaged land, and I begin to remember. I remember how these were supposed to be temporary. I remember the few months before I was locked up when they'd begun building them. These small, cold quarters would suffice just until they figured out all the details of this new plan, is what the reestablishment had said. Just until everyone was subdued. Just until people stopped protesting and realized that this change was good for them, good for their children, good for their future. I remember there were rules. No more dangerous imaginations. No more prescription medications. A new generation comprised of only healthy individuals would sustain us. The sick must be locked away. The old must be discarded. The troubled must be given up to the asylums. Only the strong should survive. Yes, of course. No more stupid languages and stupid stories and stupid paintings placed above stupid mantles. No more Christmas. No more Hanukkah. No more Ramadan and Diwali. No talk of religion, of belief, or personal convictions. Personal convictions were what nearly killed us all, is what they said. Convictions, priorities, preferences, prejudices, and ideologies divided us, deluded us, destroyed us. Selfish needs, wants, and desires needed to be obliterated. Greed, overindulgence, and gluttony had to be expunged from human behavior. The solution was in self-control, in minimalism, in sparse living conditions. One simple language and a brand new dictionary filled with words everyone would understand. These things would save us, save our children, save the human race, is what they said. Re-establish equality. Re-establish humanity. Re-establish hope, healing, and happiness. Save us! Join us! Re-establish society! The posters are still plastered on the walls. The wind whips their tattered remains, but the signs are determinedly fixed, flapping against the steel and concrete structures they're stuck to. Some are still pasted to poles sprung right out of the ground, loudspeakers now affixed at the very top. Loudspeakers that alert the people, no doubt, to the imminent dangers that surround them. But the world is eerily quiet. Pedestrians pass by, ambling along in the cold, frigid weather to do factory work and find food for their families. Hope in this world bleeds out of the barrel of a gun. No one really cares for the concept anymore. People used to want hope. They wanted to think things could get better. They wanted to believe they could go back to worrying about gossip and holiday vacations and going to parties on Saturday nights. So the reestablishment promised a future too perfect to be possible, and society was too desperate to disbelieve. They never realized they were signing away their souls to a group planning on taking advantage of their ignorance, their fear. Most civilians are too petrified to protest, but there are others who are stronger. There are others who are waiting for the right moment. There are others who have already begun to fight back. I hope it's not too late to fight back. I study every quivering branch, every imposing soldier, every window I can count. My eyes are two professional pickpockets stealing everything to store away in my mind. I lose track of the minutes we trample over. We pull up to a structure 10 times larger than the asylum and suspiciously central to civilization. From the outside, it looks like a bland building, inconspicuous in every way but its size, gray steel slabs comprising 4 flat walls, windows cracked and slammed into the 15 stories. It's bleak and bears no marking, no insignia, no proof of its true identity. Political headquarters camouflaged among the masses. The inside of the tank is a convoluted mess of buttons and levers I'm at a loss to operate, and Adam is opening my door before I have a chance to identify the pieces. His hands are in place around my waist, and my feet are now firmly on the ground, but my heart is pounding so fast, I'm certain he can hear it. He hasn't let go of me. I look up. His eyes are tight, his forehead pinched. His lips are 2 pieces of frustration forged together. I step backward, and 10,000 tiny particles shatter between us. He drops his eyes. He turns away. He inhales, and 5 fingers on 1 hand form a fickle fist.
This way.
He nods toward the building. I follow him inside. Chapter 11. I'm so prepared for unimaginable horror that the reality is almost worse. Dirty money is dripping from the walls. A year's supply of food wasted on marble floors. Hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical aid poured into fancy furniture and Persian rugs. I feel the artificial heat pouring in through air vents and think of children screaming for clean water. I squint through crystal chandeliers and hear mothers begging for mercy. I see a superficial world existing in the midst of a terrorizing reality, and I can't move. I can't breathe. So many people must have died to sustain this luxury. So many people had to lose their homes and their children and their last $5 in the bank for promises, so many promises to save them from themselves. They promised us. The reestablishment promised us hope for a better future. They said they would fix things. They said they would help us get back to the world we knew. The world with movie dates and spring weddings and baby showers. They said they would give us back our homes, our health, our sustainable future. But they stole everything. They took everything. My life, my future, my sanity, my freedom. They filled our world with weapons aimed at our foreheads and smiled as they shot 16 candles right through our future. They killed those strong enough to fight back and locked up the freaks who failed to live up to their utopian expectations. People like me. Here is proof of their corruption. My skin is cold sweat, my fingers trembling with disgust, my legs unable to withstand the waste. the selfish waste in these four walls. I'm seeing red everywhere. The blood of bodies spattered against the windows, spilled across the carpets, dripping from the chandeliers.
Juliet.
I break. I'm on my knees, my body cracking from the pain I've swallowed so many times, heaving with sobs I can no longer suppress, my dignity dissolving in my tears, the agony of this past week ripping my skin to shreds. I can't ever breathe. I can't catch the oxygen around me, and I'm dry heaving into my shirt, and I hear voices and see faces I don't recognize, wisps of words wicked away by confusion, thoughts scrambled so many times I don't know if I'm even conscious anymore. I don't know if I've officially lost my mind. I'm in the air. I'm a bag of feathers in his arms, and he's breaking through soldiers crowding around for a glimpse of the commotion, and for a moment, I don't want to care that I shouldn't want this so much. I want to forget that I'm supposed to hate him, that he betrayed me. That he's working for the same people who are trying to destroy the very little that's left of humanity. And my face is buried in the soft material of his shirt. And my cheek is pressed against his chest. And he smells like strength and courage and the world drowning in rain. I don't want him to ever, 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 ever let go of my body. I wish I could touch his skin. I wish there were no barriers between us. Reality slaps me in the face. Mortification muddles my brain. Desperate humiliation clouds my judgment. Red paints my face, bleeds through my skin. I clutch at his shirt. You can kill me, I tell him. You have guns. I'm wriggling out of his grip, and he tightens his hold around my body. His face shows no emotion but a sudden strain in his jaw, an unmistakable tension in his arms. You can just kill me, I plead. Juliet, his voice is solid with an edge of desperation. Please. I'm numb again, powerless all over again. Melting from within, life seeping out of my limbs. We're standing in front of a door. Adam takes a key card and swipes it against a black pane of glass fitted into the small space beside the handle, and the stainless steel door slides out of place. We step inside. We're all alone in a new room. Please, don't let go of me. Put me down. I tell him. There's a queen-sized bed in the middle of the space, lush carpet gracing the floors, an armoire flush against the wall, light fixtures glittering from the ceiling. The beauty is so tainted, I can't stand the sight of it. Adam gentles me onto the soft mattress and takes a small step backward.
You'll be staying here for a while, I think,
is all he says. I squeeze my eyes shut. I don't want to think about the inevitable torture awaiting me. Please, I tell him. I'd like to be left alone. A deep sigh.
That's not exactly an option.
What do you mean? I spin around.
I have to watch you, Juliet.
He says my name like a whisper. My heart, my heart, my heart.
Warner wants you to understand what he's offering you, but you're still considered a threat. He's made you my assignment. I can't leave.
I don't know whether to be thrilled or horrified. I'm horrified. You have to live with me?
I live in the barracks on the opposite end of this building, with the other soldiers, but yeah.
He clears his throat. He's not looking at me.
I'll be moving in.
There's an ache in the pit of my stomach that's gnawing on my nerves. I want to hate him and judge him and scream forever, but I'm failing because all I see is an 8-year-old boy who doesn't remember that he used to be the kindest person I ever knew. I don't want to believe this is happening. I close my eyes and curl my head into my knees.
You have to get dressed,
he says after a moment. I pop my head up. I blink at him like I can't understand what he's saying. I am dressed. He clears his throat again but tries to be quiet about it.
There's a bathroom through here.
He points. I see a door connected to the room and I'm suddenly curious. I've heard stories about people with bathrooms in their bedrooms. I guess they're not exactly in the bedroom, but they're close enough. I slip off the bed and follow his finger. As soon as I open the door, he resumes speaking.
You can shower and change in here. The bathroom. It's the only place there are no cameras.
He adds, his voice trailing off. There are cameras in my room. Of course.
You can find clothes in there.
He nods to the armoire. He suddenly looks uncomfortable. And you can't leave? I ask. He rubs his forehead and sits down on the bed. He sighs.
You have to get ready. Warner will be expecting you for dinner.
Dinner? My eyes are the size of the moon. Adam looks grim.
Yeah.
He's not going to hurt me? I'm ashamed at the relief in my voice, at the unexpected tension I've released, at the fear I didn't know I was harboring. He's going to give me dinner? I'm starving. My stomach is a tortured pit of starvation. I'm so hungry, so hungry, so hungry. I can't even imagine what real food must taste like. Adam's face is inscrutable again.
You should hurry. I can show you how everything works.
I don't have time to protest before he's in the bathroom, and I followed him inside. The door is still open, and he's standing in the middle of the small space with his back to me, and I can't understand why. I already know how to use the bathroom, I tell him. I used to live in a regular home. I used to have a family. He turns around very, very slowly, and I begin to panic. He finally lifts his head, but his eyes are darting in every direction. When he looks at me, his eyes narrow, his forehead is tight. His right hand curls into a fist, and his left hand lifts one finger to his lips. He's telling me to be quiet. Every organ in my body falls to the floor. I knew something was coming, but I didn't know it'd be Adam. I didn't think he'd be the one to hurt me, to torture me, to make me wish for death more than I ever have before. I don't even realize I'm crying until I hear the whimper and feel the silent tears stream down my face, and I'm ashamed, so ashamed. So ashamed of my weakness, but a part of me doesn't care. I'm tempted to beg, to ask for mercy, to steal his gun and shoot myself first. Dignity is the only thing I have left. He seems to register my sudden hysteria because his eyes snap open and his mouth falls to the floor.
No, God, Juliet, I'm not...
He swears under his breath. He pumps his fist against his forehead and turns away, sighing heavily. Pacing the length of the small space, he swears again. He walks out the door and doesn't look back. Chapter 12 5 full minutes under piping hot water. 2 bars of soap, both smelling of lavender. A bottle of shampoo meant only for my hair, and the touch of soft, plush towels I dare to wrap around my body. And I begin to understand. They want me to forget. They think they can wash away my memories, my loyalties, my priorities with a few hot meals and a room with a view. They think I am so easily purchased. Warner doesn't seem to understand that I grew up with nothing and I didn't hate it. I didn't want the clothes or the perfect shoes or the expensive anything. I didn't want to be draped in silk. All I ever wanted was to reach out and touch another human being, not just with my hands, but with my heart. I saw the world and its lack of compassion, its harsh, grating judgment, and its cold, resentful eyes. I saw it all around me. I had so much time to listen, to look, to study people and places and possibilities. All I had to do was open my eyes. All I had to do was open a book, to see the stories bleeding from page to page, to see the memories etched onto paper. I spent my life folded between the pages of books. In the absence of human relationships, I formed bonds with paper characters. I lived love and loss through stories threaded in history. I experienced adolescence by association. My world is one interwoven web of words, stringing limb to limb, bone to sinew, thoughts and images all together. I am a being comprised of letters, a character created by sentences, a figment of imagination formed through fiction. They want to delete every point of punctuation in my life from this earth, and I don't think I can let that happen. I slip back into my old clothes and tiptoe into the bedroom, only to find it abandoned. Adam is gone, even though he said he would stay. I don't understand him. I don't understand his actions. I don't understand my disappointment. I wish I didn't love the freshness of my skin, the feel of being perfectly clean after so long. I don't understand why I still haven't looked in the mirror, why I'm afraid of what I'll see, why I'm not sure if I'll recognize the face that might stare back at me. I open the armoire. It's bursting with dresses and shoes and shirts and pants and clothing of every kind. Colors so vivid they hurt my eyes. Material I've only ever heard of, the kind I'm almost afraid to touch. The sizes are perfect. Too perfect. They've been waiting for me. The sky is raining bricks right into my skull. I've been neglected, abandoned, ostracized, and dragged from my home. I've been poked, prodded, tested, and thrown in a cell. I've been studied. I've been starved. I've been tempted with friendship only to be left betrayed and trapped into this nightmare I'm expected to be grateful for. My parents, my teachers, Adam, Warner, the reestablishment, I am expendable to all of them. They think I'm a doll they can dress up and twist into prostration. But they're wrong.
Warner is waiting for you.
I spin around and fall back against the armoire, slamming it closed in the craze of panic clutching my heart. I steady myself and fold away my fear when I see Adam standing at the door. His mouth moves for a moment, but he says nothing. Eventually, he steps forward, so forward, until he's close enough to touch. He reaches past me to reopen the door, hiding the things I'm embarrassed to know exist.
"These are all for you,"
he says, without looking at me. His fingers touching the hem of a purple dress, a rich plum color good enough to eat. I already have clothes. My hands smooth out the wrinkles in my dirty, ragged outfit. He finally decides to look at me, but when he does, his eyebrows trip. His eyes blink and freeze. His lips part in surprise. I wonder if I've washed off a new face for myself, and I flush, hoping he's not disgusted by what he might see. I don't know why I care. He drops his gaze, takes a deep breath.
"I'll be waiting outside."
I stare at the purple dress with Adam's fingerprints. I study the inside of the armoire for only a moment before I abandon it. I comb anxious fingers through my wet hair and steel myself. I am no one's property. And I don't care what Warner wants me to look like. I step outside and Adam stares at me for a small second. He rubs the back of his neck and says nothing. He shakes his head. He starts walking. He doesn't touch me and I shouldn't notice, but I do. I have no idea what to expect. I have no idea what my life will be like in this new place, and I'm being nailed in the stomach by every exquisite embellishment, every lavish accessory, every superfluous painting, molding, lighting, coloring of this building. I hope the whole thing catches fire. I follow Adam down a long, carpeted corridor to an elevator made entirely of glass. He swipes the same key card he